Today, I'm gonna talk about subsystem code, but I just wanna quickly ask, what did you run in today's lecture, by Daniel Gottesman? What did he cover?
There was no quantum information today.
Sorry?
There wasn't a quantum information like yesterday.
Yesterday, I'm sorry. Yes, yesterday. Like code.
Speed of light, and then some general theory.
General theory. Oh, like
So there was no stabilizer performance.
there is no stabilizer.
There
That's
was QECC, I think.
sure. Okay. Fault tolerance. Nine qubit code. Good, good. So this lecture, it's very difficult to give because for two reasons. Subsystem code is a generalization of stabilizer code, which you haven't run. but let me just. So stabilizer code, maybe you have heard of it, but it's 9-qubit code is one example. Then toric code, maybe you have heard of it. It's example of stabilizer code. And this stabilizer code is like a very basic framework to talk about quantum error corrections. And then most of the quantum information tasks we know these days, they rely on stabilizer codes. But people started thinking about its generalization. That's subsystem code. And so in order to explain subsystem code, I really need to talk about stabilizer code, but it's probably I cannot do it within an hour. But so I rather want to talk briefly about some example like toric code. And then I want to deduce generic property of stabilizer code, and I want to motivate why we should talk about subsystem code. And before going to details, I want to talk about why we need to talk about this subsystem code. And it's actually, there is no precise definition of subsystem code, I guess. I mean, I myself wrote a paper on subsystem code. I think there are two or three papers. But back then, I didn't know why we are doing that. But now I think we have a very good motivation. So this subsystem code becomes very useful when there are, it's useful when there are some constraints in your Hilbert space for operators or degree of freedom. And you can imagine such a situation, for example, in realistic physical systems, there may be some degrees of freedom you cannot measure, like very high energy degrees of freedom or due to some symmetry like global symmetry, gauge symmetry, and so on. In such situations, actually, it's very meaningful to talk about this subsystem code, because basically you want to look at subsystems you are interested in, and you forget about other things. And also, there are cases where we have constraints on the operators you can measure, like very complicated operators, maybe you cannot measure, only simple operators, maybe you can. So for such situations, this subsystem code becomes very useful. And I just want to write down one standard introduction to this subject of subsystem code. It's in a kind of traditional conventional introduction to this subsystem code by Dave Bacon, which is so it's, yeah, 10 years ago. And this paper is pretty well written, and it's very clear, so I really recommend you to read it. But unfortunately, he make one interesting conjecture which turned out to be false. So you need to read this a bit with caution, but this paper is really beautifully written. But since then, we have lots of people becoming more and more interested in this subsystem code recently. And I think today some of you may have attended Daniel Harrow's talk on RT formula and Ryota Carnegie formula and quantum error corrections. It's actually, in a very simple words, what he did is just generalization of previous paper he wrote with other guys, but he generalized it to subsystem code. So in this sense, this subsystem code is somehow really more than a subject. So, in short, it's a very advanced topic. I don't know why Daniel Gottesman asked me to cover in this tutorial after first talk, but I'll try my best. But as I said, I try to be very slow, and then I just want to motivate why we want to think about subsystem code. But let me first talk about toric code. I mean, probably you have learned about toric code, but this is a beautiful model, and then it's nice to study it over and over again. So the toric code, you have qubits on edges of your any graph, planar graph. Then I sort of assume that audience are more like sifting to more in from condensed matter or high energy side. So I'm gonna use the language of like Hamiltonian, but this toric code has the following Hamiltonian, where BP is a four-body tensor product of power is the operator on each packet. And then this A is a tensor product of four-body Pauli X operator. Now, we are interested in this Hamiltonian, but the one first observation you can make is, of course, these BP operators and this AV operators commute with each other, right? Because if I have this BP operator on this placket and then this A operator on this vertex, then they share two Pauli operators. So they commute with each other. Furthermore, if I square these operators, then I just get identity operator. This means that this operator has eigenvalue plus minus one. So you can solve this Hamiltonian completely. So this is like an exactly solvable model. Now, we are interested in the ground states of this Hamiltonian. And the ground state is, of course, energy is minimized when this eigenvalue is plus one. So this ground state space, which is code word space, is defined to be the set of states which satisfies right. Okay. But if you look at these models carefully, you'd notice that this ground state space contains many, many qubits, many states. Namely, that's because these constraints, BP plus minus one, are redundant. Namely, if I multiply all these BP operators together, then you get the identity. So this plus minus one constraints are not, yep.
Does it matter in which direction the Pauli X? I mean, is there some
arrows on the links? Arrow on the links, if you want to generalize this model. So this is a qubit toric code. If you want to do the qubit toric code with like three state spin, four state spin, five state spin, you need to consider arrow. But only for this G2 cases, you don't need to worry about these arrows. That's why it's easier to do this. Yes. So then another thing is this constraint. Okay, so there is still like, so by picking up the eigenvalue, I'm sort of like cutting the Hilbert space into half, but there is still this degeneracy. And from that, you can deduce that there are four degenerate ground states. Sure. And I just want to list all the logical operators in this Doric code. So logical operators. So logical operators, operators which commute with the Hamiltonian. And you can basically write down these guys. Let me just write it down. Okay, these are the logical operators. Now, so this logical operator commute with and okay. But you see that these two operators anti-commute with each other. These two operators anti-commute with each other. So this should have some non-trivial action to my four-fold states in my code world space. So that's why we call them logical operators. It has some logical action. And you see that this logical operator is like a string, so it has big weight. So if so, in some sense, your ground states, foreground states are separated from each other in a big distances. And that actually gives you the ability to correct errors. Okay, and now what do I need to say? So in this sense, so there are four states. So it's like this operator. Oops. So in this Toric code, you can basically encode information about two logical qubits because there are four, 2, 2, 2. So I can encode information about four state quantum information into this this lattice. So this is 2 qubit. This is encoded into n qubit with big N. So this is then these logical operators are basically Pauli operators acting on my logical qubits. This is like Pauli X operator acting on my first logical qubit, Z on the first qubit, X to the second qubit, and Z to the second qubit. Is this clear? Okay, so now these logical operators are very important because this tells you about the symmetry of this Hilbert space. Namely, if you plot the energy spectrum of my Hamiltonian, then I have four degenerate ground states, and then I have a bunch of excited states. But I can further diagonalize my Hamiltonian by using, let's say, Pauli, logical Pauli Z operator. Then it's like my entire spectrum has four sectors. Right. Okay. And then you are basically encoding information into this sector, this sector, this sector, this sector, and so on. So this is basically the idea of the Toric code. Sure. Yes, so that logical Z1, Z2, yes, commute. And then so the point is only on this, the same column, anti-commute. So it's like Pauli operator. Yes, yes. Okay, so the reason why I wanted to talk about this, I needed to talk about this Toric code is this probably can easily generalize to the notion of the stabilizer code. Yeah, this is the problem. Yeah. I know that if I put this on, this should be fine. Anyway, stabilizer code. Okay, let us just slightly generalize this idea of the toric code. What we did is we basically put these interaction terms, which are made of Pauli operators, so that they commute with each other. So now we can generally think about the Hamiltonian, where Sj are Pauli operators, which commute with each other. That's of course exactly solvable because they can take an eigenvalue plus minus one that's simultaneous. Then you can try to look for a ground state or cold world space, which satisfies this condition. Then this minimizes the energy. And then if this system is degenerate, then you can try to put your qubits into this degenerate states. And then essentially this is the stabilizer code. So now you can sort of go back to the toric code and then just Sj are these BP operators, AV operators, and then this is the code. And what is logical operator? Well, logical operator, maybe I can use L. Logical operator is actually formally a commutant of this operator S. S is basically a group generated by my stabilizer operators. So it's just a bunch of collections of my stabilizer operators. In this language, it's just BP AV operator. Then by commutant, I mean I'm interested in some operator O, which commute with Sj operators, right? That's what I was doing. And then if I compute this object, and then these do not change the spectrum of my Hamiltonian, meaning that if I start from ground state or the cold world state, then I will be inside the cold world space. But sometimes they can have a non-trivial action into my cold world.
So the whole Sj is itself not part of the commutant.
Sj is part of the commutant, and the non-trivial logical operator is basically the module. Okay, then why I wanted to make a bit of like a jargon to talk about stabilizer code is this is basically, it generalized nicely to subsystem code. And,
I have a question. Are you restricting like nearest neighbor polys or
In the language of stabilizer code, it can be anything. The only constraint is this commutation. And of course, if you are interested in physically realistic systems, you should impose like locality. But yeah, I mean, essentially it can be anything. And then now, if I'm given such an abelian group, this S, then I can always decompose Hilbert space into this big O plus. I don't know what's the name of this guy, but the point is, so S is basically labeling the eigenstate of my stabilizers. And then this is my cold world space. Okay. So this is essentially basic idea of the stabilizer code. So everything is exactly solvable. It's very easy. You just need to compute commutant and then you look at weight of these logical operators and then everything is very simple.
Can you just point
out again? What's S? Oh, S is formally a group of operators which obtained by these stabilizers.
The very last slide with the big tensor.
This thing. S is basically I'm labeling the eigenvalues of this SJ operators. Because these are Pauli and commuting, so I can diagonalize, and it's plus minus one. Then if all of them are plus, then I'm minimizing the energy, so I can define. Okay, so that's like a very quick review of the...
Code word
is basically ground state space of this Hamiltonian, which is the subspace. Then, so I think one easy way to remember that, like the difference between subsystem code and stabilizer code is this big plus object is actually a decomposition to subspaces. But we will use this one. This is subsystem. I will explain it later. Okay, now this is like a really quick review of stabilizer code. I hope you get the idea. But it's very simple. And then simple, and then that's why we have been talking about stabilizer code for a long time. But now we are in need to generalize it for many reasons. I mean, of course, from purely quantum information theoretic reasons, and also condensed matter reasons, and also high energy reasons. There are many motivations. Okay, now I want to give you a kind of example, which actually Dave Bacon proposed, which can be sort of viewed as subsystem code, and it motivates why sort of we want to consider subsystem code. So Bacon's code. So Bacon's code is in some sense very similar to the toric code in terms of symmetry, but it's not solvable, or at least I don't know how to solve. Again, square lattice, but now you place qubits or spin 1/2 on vertices. Good. Now your Hamiltonian consists of the following terms. One of the terms is on every lateral bond, I want to put Pauli X operator, but only on lateral bond. For every vertical bond, I'm going to put Pauli Z operators. Now, first observation is, of course, if we want to solve like that, it doesn't work because these operators do not commute with each other anymore. So there's no hope of solving this. I guess there is no hope. At least I do not know. But this strategy I have been using, like this commutant logical operators, it's still valid in the following sense. That is, so this is XX, this. The reason is, let's think about this operator. Like a string of X operator. And also, string of Z operator. Okay. Then this is like really like a logical operator, right? Because let me call it X bar, then Z bar. Then first observation is, of course, this operator commutes with the Hamiltonian. So this is really a symmetry of my Hamiltonian. So it's essentially similar to this string-like operator. By the way, I want to say that this X operator only runs in this direction. Z operator only that runs in this direction. Because if you try to construct X operator in this direction, it can't commute with this. So for this reason, if you try to plot energy spectrum of this Hamiltonian, then, wow, again, it's not solvable, but we are sure that it's twofold degenerate. And it's probably gapped, or maybe you can fine tune the amplitude so that it is gapped, I don't know, but it's twofold degenerate. Then this Bacon's idea, or like this subsystem code idea in the early days is basically, we want to use this kind of symmetry to encode logical qubit. Then, so. So we want to encode one logical qubit into this kind of super selection sector or whatever you want to call. This was the idea. And now, in order to analyze the kind of like a coding structure of this model, I actually need to switch to this a bit abstract language. So let me do it. But I hope that this example somehow motivates you the idea of what we are going to do in this subsystem code. Any questions so far? Well, fine. Sure.
The spectrum is gapless, and does it affect like the, you know,
so it's
use of logical
qubits? It's a very, very good question. So when this paper came out, actually, that's one of the criticisms that because of the gaplessness, there must be something wrong about this model. And then later, actually, it's Fernando Pastowski and his friends rigorously proved that this specific model does not work as a quantum error correction. There is kind of an instability. But more recently, Hector Bombin, maybe you have heard of him, he proposed a three-dimensional model of subsystem codes, which is very interesting and it's provably stable in a coding sense. But his Hamiltonian, it's actually by choosing parameter range, you can switch to different topological phases. One of the phases is actually 3D topological order. The other is like a trivial order, but on the surface, on the boundary, you have 2D topological order. And then, so it's a very cool model, but we don't understand these models. So that's why I'm a bit uncomfortable in like giving a lecture on subsystem code, because there are many new things which I don't understand. I at this point, I don't have comprehensive understanding, but it's. So this particular model, I use it as a motivation, but it turns out it's not stable in a coding theory sense. Okay, so now, how do we analyze this Bacon's code? So remember that what we did is we just picked all these operators in the Hamiltonian and then constructed some group of operators. So let's do the same thing. I'm going to call it G group, but I'm going to consider a group of operators which are generated by all the lateral bond operators and all the vertical bond operators. But the problem is this is no longer commuting with each other. So because of that, I'm interested in center of this operator. By center, formally, I mean the following. It's an operator which commute with, so this is a shorthand notation that this operator commutes with everything inside Z. And this is inside Z. And also, I am interested in commutant. Commutant is basically it commutes with G, but I don't put this constraint. So it can be outside of my algebra or group of operators. Now, why I wanted to do this is, before talking about it, I think it's nice to look at the center and the commutant in this Bacon's code. So what is center? I want to construct the operator which commutes with all these operators. But remember that I constructed these logical operators. These operators, I cannot form it by Z operators. So they are in the commutant. So this, they are in the commutant, but they are not in the center. So what are the center operators? So example of centers. Then, you should.
Inside of G?
Oh, it's contained inside it is inside G. That means that, roughly speaking, this operator can be formed as a product of these operators.
Okay.
I thought G was the group generated by those two operators.
Yes. So inside means that this operator can be constructed from these guys.
Okay.
Then, so I'm going to give you one example, which is very simple. A pair of lines, this guy. Then, since this single line commuted with G, two lines, of course, commute. But the point is, these two lines, I can form it because if I multiply all the lateral bond operators, I can construct this operator. Similarly, this is also in the center, right? And commutant is basically these are the logical operators. Now, you see that center is by the definition, it is abelian, right? Because center must commute among each other. So it's abelian group. Moreover, this is, I'm talking about Pauli operators. So this center is actually like an abelian group of stabilizers. And this is very good because
sorry, for the baking code, is this completely described to the center and the commutant?
Sorry?
I said for the baking code, is what you wrote on the board the complete center and commutant? Are there
no, that's complete, basically. Yes, sure. Now, nice thing about this center is it's abelian. Then, now, in order to analyze this Bacon's code, I can somehow try to think about stabilizer code, but by taking this stabilizer code, and I'm going to actually use this center as okay, so I'm effectively sort of thinking about a stabilizer code, which consists of these abelian operators. Then by using this center operator, let me label it S1 to SM. And these are not operators actually appearing on the Hamiltonian, but they are still a symmetry of my Hamiltonian. So I can basically decompose my Hilbert space as if I'm viewing this as a stabilizer code. And then again, I'm gonna declare that I'm gonna use this subspace with 11111 as my code word space. Okay. But as you see, this center or my stabilizers, there are not many of them because 1, 2, 3, 4 or 1, 2, 3, 4. It's really linear in the system size, not square. So this each Hilbert space I decompose. It's still huge. But the point is, I can further decompose, let's say, this code word subspace into subsystems. I don't know how many qubits I have in this subspace, but I can now use this tensor product so that let's say real, maybe, engage in the following way. And now how this decomposed position works is this commutant, the real logical operators, they only act on these real qubits. So it's one qubit degree of freedom associated with these operators. But everything else goes to this gauge subsystem. And actually, we call it gauge logical operators because we don't care much about it. So this Bacon's code, because of this analysis, it's similar to considering stabilizer code with big code word. It encodes lots of logical qubits, but we declare that we neglect some of them. And we only look at one qubit, one logical qubit. So this is a real logical qubit. And then this is the gauge logical. Okay. Now I can use this decomposition further. And then for each S, so it's a binary, one minus one, this vector, I can decompose it into so everything I care comes here, everything I don't care comes here.
Why are we doing this decomposition into real and
gauge? Why? So sorry?
Why are you doing this particular decomposition of having real logical qubits and then gauge?
So, because in this discussion, we sort of know that where it's not that clear where I'm encoding my logical qubit from this argument, and then this decomposition makes it precise. So for example, if you have some error, then like Pauli X error acting on one side, then sometimes my error acts on this real qubit. That's very problematic. But if it just talks to my gauge logical qubits, I don't care, right? So that's why this is the decomposition. And then if you are at Dan Harrell's talk today, you might have seen this kind of decomposition. He, I think, kind of derived it. I don't remember, but so it's actually what he's doing is secretly a subsystem code.
Can't you have so errors of operators that map from the real space to the gauge space? If you have a guarantee things that are in the real part of the interface stay there somehow, or
yes,
your logical operators, uh-huh, how they act in the spectrum that you call it?
If I'm given a logical operator,
so any operator that commutes with Hamiltonian,
any operator which commute with the Hamiltonian, which talks only here. So, right. So yes. So let me. So I'm planning to do it more explicit, but the answer is yes. So now let's look at these operators. These centers, of course, commute with the Hamiltonian. So in this Hilbert space, it just doesn't do anything. It's used to do this plus decomposition. But if I have a commutant, basically, so the way this decomposition works is I'm decomposing. It's actually by definition or by construction, this decomposition, this commutant must only talk to this real part, not gauge part. And right. The same reason, these operator from XX and ZZ, they only talk to gauge part. And this is roughly the framework of subsystem codes developed by Dave Bacon. And right. So, but now, It's yeah. Any questions so far?
How did we decide what was real and what was gauge?
How do we decide?
I mean,
Yes, yes.
So is it by the fact that the comment head only acts, engages the part where the comment head acts on?
So are you asking how to decompose explicitly? First of all, there is a well-defined algorithm to do that. And it's actually basically you just want to diagonalize matrix in a block diagonal way. And so that's...
I mean, just an analogy in that case, it was the region A and the complement region A.
Yes, yes. So he picked up from Neumann algebra or any algebra. That is basically G here. Then he decomposed by first finding center. Then center is basically a decomposition of the plus. Now he wanted to decompose. So in his deconstruction, my construction is real pattern, gauge pattern, kind of interchanged. But so he wanted to decompose the Hilbert space into two parts, which he cares, this algebra case or the other part. And basically, so since Dan gave a talk on this subject, basically, if I have some algebra A, I mean, to be concrete, you can consider like a group of Pauli operators, could be non-abelian, but any algebra which is, I mean, closed under Hermite conjugate, it works. Given any algebra, this type of decomposition works. There exists such a decomposition, such that operator from A, basically acts like identity and then something. But now I took commutant, but basically by taking commutant of my, so let me define B as a commutant of A, then commutant is those which acts on this part. So this structure theorem actually gives you, I don't know which is stronger, but this gives you a proof of the famous von Neumann's double commutant theorem.
I guess my point was, that's if we know why we choose A, because it's the region we want to be entangled. I mean, here, the question is, how do we decide on real and gauge? How did you make that choice?
I mean, this is pretty automatic, right? You collect all the operators in the Hamiltonian, construct the algebra or its group, and then you look for commutant. Yeah, then based on this structure, you just decompose it. Right, yeah.
And if errors occur on the gauge qubits, then that's not detrimental, it's not something we care about, only if they occur.
I mean, because if I measure this logical operator, yeah, I definitely know that this my logical operator do not talk to this gauge operator, so it does not pick up any noise.
Sorry, which one corresponded to which? I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm also confused.
There's a real, I mean, in this case, what's the real space? Is it the one system
yes,
at the
yes,
center
yes.
or the one
so,
system?
So in my construction, I sort of decomposed everything by using commutant. So I picked the operator G, and then gauge part is the one which this my G operators talks to. And these are the and then, but the logical operators, which are commutant of my G, so it doesn't talk to gauge at all, but it only talks to real part.
Maybe
that was just a choice, right?
You could that's choice, and it's like basically commutant, so it can go.
So you could have used G instead of commutant G, and
yes.
labeled the real as commutant gauge and vice versa.
Right.
So the important thing is that the space decomposes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
So that's the basic idea of subsystem calls, and then I mean, for a long time, I thought that this is just like a easy generalization of stabilizer code. But then I personally, to be honest, didn't care much about it. But I mean, recently there are like a growing interest on this decompositions and subsystems, and so I really hope to re-examine these structures, because this framework of Pauli is pretty limited. At the same time, this structure theorem is pretty abstract. It's very hard to use on them. So that's why actually I was a bit uncomfortable in giving this lecture, because I want to examine this subject again and then try to have a more comprehensive understanding. But well, this is basically what I can say at this point. Sorry. I mean, this is pretty advanced topic, I guess. But I really think that there are many open questions, and the subsystem code I mentioned by Hector Bombin, this is very mysterious model, and I think it has new physics in 3D TQFT. And 3D TQFT, basically, we don't understand much, so that's pretty nice. And then also, yeah, this ADS-CFT and then Dan Harrow's recent work.
3D, 3 plus 1D?
3 plus 1D, yes.
Wait, so you're saying that model is not exactly solvable, but it's provably gas?
So if you, there are two parameter regimes. If you increase some strength very strong, then it goes to some three-dimensional topological order. If you crank up another term, then the bulk becomes trivial, but on the boundary you have some topological order. Then he wanted to do this because we want to do quantum computation. Then there are some quantum gates you can reliably do in two spatial dimensions, but it's not universal. But in 3D, there are another gate which you can do. But it's again, by themselves, it's not universal. But if we combine this 2D and 3D, we know that it's universal. So the question was how to nicely combat between them. And his model somehow nicely interpolate. And even more actually, by just doing some easy measurement and then error correction, actually you can phototolerantly switch back and forth in this model. So that's pretty nice model, but we don't know what's the underlying physics. I even don't know if there is a physics behind it or not. I mean, it's a very interesting model, but I don't know. Anyway, so that's all I can say. But
Is this model kind of related to what you were working on this one-form symmetry? It looks like it's some string operator that you use with
computer,
but you don't have a global symmetry.
So you mean this Bacon's model or this Hector Bombin's
model?
Bacon model? Bacon's model is actually turned out to be not topologically ordered at all.
But I mean in terms of symmetry, right? You have some kind of string operator.
Now I can tell you one thing. So the reason why this toric code is stable is not because of it has a string, but its string is deformable.
Yes.
So if I saw errors, then I can find a string which avoids errors. That's why I can reliably decode. But in this case, you notice that this string is not deformable, right? If I deform string, it's no longer commutative. It has to be straight string. Then that's actually the way you see that this model is not stable.
So I might have dismissed this, but how is it correct errors? Errors going to be in its commutative?
This one? Or this?
The Bacon's
code. So basically, you have this big stabilizer operator, right?
Yeah.
then you basically measure it, and then from this information you try to deduce the decoding, which corrects errors of this real logical qubit.
No matter if it's in G or commutative.
Right, right, right. But you see the problem probably because there are only like a small number of stabilizers, so that information is really small. So that's why another way to see the, why it doesn't work. But this 3D model of Hector has lots of stabilizers, so it, and it's actually local, so it's easy to measure.
Could you get one logical qubit per sector of S?
So in this specific example, if I look at the commutant, I only found a pair of anti-commuting logical operators. Mm-hmm. That's why I had one. But if you have two pairs, then you can encode two.
Okay.